Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 5, The Cause of All Causes, text number 31. Taijasattu Vikurvanad,
Taijasattu Vikurvanad,
Indriyani Dashabhavan, Jnana Shakti Kriya Shakti,
Jnana Shakti Kriya Shakti,
Budhir Pranascha Thaijaso,
Budhir Pranascha Thaijaso,
Shrotram Thagrana Drik Jiha,
Shrotram Thagrana Drik Jiha,
Vagdo Midram Gripayavaha, Tejasa, by the passionate egoism,
to
the Kurvanat,
transformation of
Indriyani, the senses,
Dasha,
ten,
Abhavan,
generated, Jnana Shakti, the five senses for acquiring knowledge.
Kriya Shakti,
the five senses of activities.
Buddhi,
intelligence.
Prana,
the living energy.
Chat,
also. Tejaso, all products of the mode of passion. Shrotram, the sense for hearing. Thak, the sense for touching. Grana, the sense for smelling. Drik, the sense for seeing. Jiva, the sense for tasting. Vak, the sense for speaking. Do, the sense for handling. Medra, the genitals. Angri, the legs. Payavaha, the sense for evacuating. Translation. By further transformation of the mode of passion, the sense organs like the ear, skin, nose, eyes, tongue, mouth, hands, genitals, legs, and the outlet for evacuating, together with intelligence and living energy, are all generated. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The living condition in material existence depends more or less on one's intelligence and powerful living energy. Intelligence, to counteract the hard struggle for existence, is assisted by the senses for acquiring knowledge, and the living entity, the living energy, maintains himself by manipulating the active organs like the hands and legs. But on the whole, the struggle for existence is an exertion of the mode of passion. Therefore, all the sense organs headed by intelligence and the living energy, prana, are different products and byproducts of the second mode of nature called passion. This mode of passion, however, is the product of the air element as described before. Let us read the verse again. Taijasattu vikurvanat indriyani dashabhavan jnana shakti kriya shakti buddhi pranascha taijaso shrotram thagana drigjiva vagdo medrangri payavaha. By further transformation of the mode of passion, the sense organs like the ear, skin, nose, eyes, tongue, mouth, hands, genitals, legs, and the outlet for evacuating, together with intelligence and living energy, are all generated. So here the process of creation is being spoken, and Tripurika Maharaj In essence, these verses are describing the process of creation that is here describes the cause of all causes. That's the nature of this chapter. But in another sense, the living entity is also one of the causes of creation. So, in the beginning of this chapter, Brahma described to Narada Muni that ultimately everything is a manifestation of the energies of the Lord. So there is the spiritual energy manifested as the Lord's glance, where he glances at the material energy. The material energy is considered to be the an expansion from the Lord's own spiritual potency. It is a shadow of the chit potency. And then there are the living entities, which are also spiritual by nature, who have been injected into the material world. So, first of all, Brahma describes that everything is nothing but the energies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore the whole material creation is resting upon his energies, and therefore he is the cause of all causes. At the same time, why would the Supreme Lord manifest the material world? Is because the living entities have a particular svabhava or nature and karma. They want to perform certain activities according to certain material proclivities which stem from their desire to imitate the Supreme Lord, and therefore he manifests the whole material creation as a place where the living entities can come, and in an illusory sort of a way, they can pretend to be the supreme enjoyer and the supreme controller. So in that sense, another cause of material creation is the living entity himself, a subordinate cause. So this is how this is described, is in these verses, because we can see that the Supreme Lord, when he glances at the material energy, it is in a state of the modes of material nature which are there within the pradhan, the material energy. Those modes of material nature are in a state of equilibrium. But when he glances at them, his energy in the form of time activates or sets them in motion, the modes of material nature, and therefore, the modes of material nature begin to interact with each other, and there is the manifestation of the Mahatattva. And the Mahatattva manifests as the 16 primary elements of creation. So, in the beginning, the Mahatattva is there predominantly in the mode of Sattva-guna. But then later, by an increase of the mode of passion, which is necessary for creation, there is a predominance of rajas, and so then sometimes the mahatattva is then called the sutra tattva. But then gradually the mode of tamas increases. It is the most predominant factor of the Mahatattva. All the modes of material nature there, sattva, rajas and tamas, but tamas is there in greater predominance. And when that Mahatattva is in that state, it is known as ahankara, or the false ego. How it gets to that state, of course, is because the living entities injected within that Mahatattva, and you know, there is an energy which is also coming from them by the force of their desire for particular material activities, svabhava, according to their material propensities, and according to the, you know, their karma or destiny, the mahatattva actually is also transformed by the energies of the Lord and the living entity. So here it is described, so we have heard how there is the from the sky, the various elements have been transformed from the ahankara, which is, as we said, the mahatattva has a predominance of tamas, and the tamas aspect of that ahankara manifests the five gross elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, and their subtle forms, sound, touch, taste, sight, smell, like that. So, and the various demigods are also no, that's the matter because that's the matter of goodness. So these so then the mode of goodness aspect of the ahankara, mahatattva, in the mode of ahankara, the mode of goodness aspects manifest the 10 demigods controlling the bodily movements, such as known as the control of the directions, control of the air, the sun god, the father of Daksha, the Asvinikumaras, that's two, the fire god, the king of heaven Indra, the worshipful deity of heaven, that's the chief of the Adityas, and Brahmaji, that's 10. And they all come into existence, those 10 principal demigods, so then here, so here it describes that the mode of passion, the mahatattva, in its state of the ahankara, it is further transformed by the mode of passion, and we get the various sense organs like the ears, skin, nose, eyes, tongue, mouth, hands, genitals, leg, and the outlet for evacuating, together with intelligence and the living entity, they're all generated. Now, did it mention the mind here? Oh, the mind, yes, that was from the mode of goodness, the mind is generated along with the 10 demigods. So this is always sometimes difficult to understand, that in the Bhagavad Gita it describes that there's a verse in the third chapter. Verse 42 says, Indriyani Parayanyako Indriyabhya Paramanaha Manasastu Parabuddhi Yobuddhi Paratastu Sa. The working senses are superior to dull matter. Mind is higher than their senses. Intelligence is still higher than the mind. And he, the soul, is even higher than the intelligence. So, here we see that the working senses are superior to dull matter. In other words, the body itself is a manifestation of dull matter, but because the senses are the active working part of the body for fulfilling one's desires through one's intelligence, then that is considered higher. A higher principle. So the senses of the body are literally maintaining the whole body. If you had a body and without the senses to acquire knowledge and to perform activities, you couldn't maintain that struggle for existence. So they're a higher principle. Then higher than the senses is the mind. So the mind is the center of all sensual activities. That the senses can gather knowledge, and then there are many different ideas and conceptions and thoughts and desires, thinking, feeling and willing, which manifest within the mind. Otherwise, for instance, if you have so many different the senses are gathering so many different impressions and knowledge, but they just disappear into a void. There has to be something which literally can receive those impressions. So the eyes see something, but then the senses are passing that on to the mind. If there was no mind to pass the impressions on to, then what is the use, of the eyes bringing in that knowledge? So the mind is, gathers all the information and is able to reflect upon. So it's a more subtle and higher principle than the senses. And then it describes that the intelligence is still higher than the mind. Of course, this is sometimes a bit of a tricky one, because we understand that the material body is a manifestation of the gross material elements, which are appearing from the mahat-tattva, in its mode of tama, and the mind is a manifestation from goodness. And yet it is saying that the intelligence, which is a manifestation of passion, is actually higher than the mind, which is a manifestation of goodness. But actually, although the intelligence is a manifestation of the mode of passion, it is still a more subtle element than the mind. So therefore Prabhupada mentions here in this purport, he says, the senses are different outlets for the activities of lust. Lust is reserved within the body, but it is given vent through the senses. Therefore the senses are superior to the body as a whole. These outlets are not in use when there is superior consciousness or Krishna consciousness. In Krishna consciousness, the soul makes direct connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the hierarchy of bodily functions, as described here, ultimately ends in the Supreme Soul. Bodily action means the functions of the senses, and stopping the senses means stopping all bodily actions. But since the mind is active, then even though the body may be silent and at rest, the mind will act as it does during dreaming. But above the mind is the discrimination of the intelligence. And above the intelligence is the soul proper. So the mind is receiving so much information from the senses, and may, there is desires there, and thoughts. The mind is active in many different ways, contemplating various activities of how to enjoy the senses, but the intelligence is higher than the mind in that it is giving it its proper direction. It is controlling the mind. So the analogy is given of the chariot with the five horses. So the chariot, the five horses, represent the senses, the five senses. The reins represent the mind. And the driver represents intelligence. And sitting next to him is a passenger, which represents the soul. So, as described here, it is therefore the soul above the intelligence is the soul proper. It is therefore the soul is directly engaged with the Supreme. Naturally, all other subordinates, namely the intelligence, mind and senses, will automatically be engaged. So, if the soul in contact is awake and in contact with the Supreme Lord, the soul, the passenger should say to the driver, you know, look, there's a cliff just up ahead. You know, we don't want to go there. You know, you turn this way and we're heading home by the safest route, like that. And then the driver, representing the intelligence, will take the reins, which is the mind, and steer all of the senses in a certain direction. So you see that the intelligence is, you know, in effect, the you know, the reins representing the mind. The reins are not really active. It's the intelligence, the driver, which is active. You know, therefore, the mode of passion is necessary in the manifestation of the intelligence. And although it is manifested by the mode of intelligence, it is actually a higher principle than the mind, because the mind is passive, whereas the intelligence is actually actively engaged in steering the mind and the senses. So then it describes here that in the Katha Upanishad there is a similar passage in which it is said that the objects of sense gratification are superior to the senses. So here that's stated in the reverse. There it's saying, here in the Bhagavad Gita it said that the working senses are superior to dull matter. Then in the Katha Upanishad it says that the objects of sense gratification are superior to the senses. And that is because the senses, if they're not controlled by the spiritual strength of the soul, they will capture the living entity's mind and intelligence. So they become stronger. And in that case, you have the situation where the driver, the passenger, the soul in the chariot is asleep, and therefore the driver is just going wherever the horses are dragging. So the horses just want to go here, and the horses want to go there, and the driver is just allowing the horses to, you know, go. He's not getting any good instruction. The mind is superior to the sense objects. It is therefore the mind. If therefore the mind is directly engaged in the service of the Lord constantly, then there is no chance that the senses will become engaged in other ways. This mental attitude has already been explained. Padam drishvala vatati. If the mind is engaged in the transcendental service of the Lord, there is no chance of its being engaged in the lower propensities. In the Akatha Upanishad, the soul has been described as Mahan, the great. Therefore, the soul is above all, namely the sense objects, the senses, the mind and the intelligence. Therefore, directly understanding the constitutional position of the soul is the solution to the whole problem. With intelligence, one has to seek out the constitutional position of the soul and then engage the mind always in Krishna consciousness. That solves the whole problem. A neophyte spiritualist is generally advised to keep aloof from the objects of the senses, but aside from that, one has to strengthen the mind by use of the intelligence. If by intelligence one engages one's mind in Krishna consciousness by complete surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then automatically the mind becomes stronger. And even though the senses are very strong like serpents, they will be no more effective than serpents with broken fangs. But even though the soul is the master of intelligence and mind, and the senses also, still, unless it is strengthened by association with Krishna, in Krishna consciousness, there is every chance of falling down due to the agitated mind. So, in the next verse also, Prabhupada describes that the intelligence is the next door neighbour of the soul. And the intelligence, just read that, as Prabhupada says exactly. In the previous verse 40. Intelligence is the immediate next door neighbor of the spirit soul. Lusty intelligence influences spirit soul to acquire the false ego and identify itself with matter and thus with the mind and senses. So here we can see that the intelligence, being very intimately connected with the soul, most intimately connected with the soul, it influences the soul to acquire the false ego and thus identify with matter. That's the material senses in the mind. So the intelligence is the pivotal point, as given in that nice analogy by the chariot. That is a pivotal point. If the intelligence is, which is the, you know, the highest principle, you know, very, very refined principle, most subtle form of material energy, if that is able to influence the soul can either become free from, understand that I should not fulfill these material desires and try to be the enjoyer and the controller of matter. I should understand that I am an eternal soul, part and parcel of Krishna, and my real activities are to serve the Supreme Lord. So this, but the whole thing depends upon understanding the science of the soul, and the soul must be in association with Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, that's the part, therefore we have, you know, you have in all your educational systems around the world, you know, you have the science of psychology and what have you, and they're trying to fix the whole problem without knowledge of the soul. You know, people's minds and intelligence and senses become all disturbed in so many different ways, and they have so many different material desires which they can't control, and obsessions, and so for instance people may have addictions to gambling, you know, and they just can't stop, they're addicted. And basically, you know, the mind and the intelligence and the senses are just out of control, and you know, they gamble and they've lost their house. And they keep gambling, and then they lose their family. And they keep gambling, you know, and then they get themselves in debt, you know. So not only they lost everything they were for, now they're in, you know, debt for hundreds of thousands of dollars. But they can't stop. So they go to a psychologist, you know, or you know, Gamblers Anonymous, or, you know, people go to Alcohol Anonymous, or, you know, drugs anonymous, they have sex anonymous, what have you, you know, they have all these things, but they can't stop, they never stop. They just, you know, usually what happens is that when they go to these places, people who think that they're somehow forced by either law or family or, you know, what have you to go to these places and psychologists and what have you to try and fix a problem, and they think, well, now that I'm going there, people think I've stopped, and therefore they're not watching me so closely, and therefore they, you know, they find now I can actually gamble more when I'm going to these anonymous places, because instead of going to the meeting, I should go down to the tab or down to the pub. Like that, you know. So, but they can't stop it. Now, Prabhupada used to give the example, of course, of you know, that in America they were spending billions of dollars to try and stop the youth from taking intoxications, you know, the hippies, and they couldn't do it. And yet they would just go to the temple and, you know, read the Gita, hear the Gita, and that's it. You know, all their billions of dollars, all their psychologists, all their books of knowledge, you know, ridiculous. You know, they pay these scientists millions and millions of dollars. The other day I was watching the news and, you know, they've done this research on Alzheimer's for 30 years. Imagine how many billions of dollars has gone into that. And this is their conclusion. That if you want to, we can't say for sure, but, you know, it may help if you eat good food, like fruit and vegetables. Don't take too much, you know, intoxication, like drinking and smoking. There's about four things, like, you know, get, you know, some decent sleep. There's about four, five things, and I thought, 30 years and millions of dollars to tell us what we already know is the basic principles of a healthy life. Why would we, what a waste of time, what a waste of money. It's just, you know. But the thing that they can't actually fix anything, because as described here in the Bhagavad Gita, unless the intelligence is supported by the soul who's awake in Krishna consciousness, the soul is supported by Krishna, getting direction from Krishna, and then the soul is directing the intelligence to, you know, control the mind for activities in Krishna consciousness. So people, you know, people say that, oh, you know, Bhagavad Gita, because today, of course, is the Advent day of the Bhagavad Gita. You know, the Bhagavad Gita was spoken some, you know, 5,000 years ago. But people are not interested that in the Bhagavad Gita, because they think that everything has changed. You know, Bhagavad Gita was spoken 5,000 years ago, and everything has changed. But actually, you know, did people not have mind and senses 5,000 years ago? Is that what they're saying? 5,000 years ago, people didn't have mind, senses, and body, and they didn't have this problem then. 5,000 years ago, people didn't have material desires. It's only now, you know. Prabhupada gives the analogy that there are some insects, and their whole life is at night time. You know, so at night, in one night, they'll take birth, they'll grow, they'll have their family, they'll have their children, they'll have all their activities with all their family and that, and then they'll be dead. By the time the sun, before the sun rises, they're finished. That's their whole life. He says if one of those little insects somehow or another is still living, When the day comes, they will say, oh, everything has changed. Everything has changed. It's a whole new world. But of course, those living entities, they don't understand that day has always followed night from time immemorial. But because they only live within a small fragment of time, to them everything has changed. We know that actually, there are four yugas: Satya, Chaita, Dwapara, Kali. Kali Yuga will always come. And in Kali Yuga, people become very materialistic and develop different material improvements and forget spiritual knowledge. Everything is based, as Prabhupada said, upon this absorption in Kriya and Dravya Shaktis. Trying to exploit the material resources with industry. That is the nature of Kali Yuga. That is there. And in every Kali Yuga, they do something very similar. But this Bhagavad Gita, this timeless wisdom of the Bhagavad Gita, is always what the spirit soul requires, even in the time of Lord Rama. It mentions in the Bhagavad Gita that Dasarath, Lord Ram's father, that he attained perfection by following these principles of the Bhagavad Gita. So it's also mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam Mahatmya that Dasarath, he attained perfection by following the principles of the Bhagavad Gita. Because we know that Bhagavad Gita is like one time some Prabhupada said, how old is the Bhagavad Gita? And one devotee said, 5,000 years old. He said, haven't you read the Bhagavad Gita? Where do you get that it's 5,000 years old? Bhagavad Gita was spoken to the sun god, was it some 40 million years ago or something? It was studied by Dasarath, even in the time of Lord Rama. He took shelter of the Bhagavad Gita, and that was some couple of million years ago. So this knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita is an essential scripture, practically, which is its teachings are always there, because things never change. Even in the time of Rama, it's still these factors of having to deal with the material body, the material mind, the material senses, that will always be there. But people very skillfully avoid the Bhagavad Gita. Actually, Srila Vyasadeva, he compiled the Bhagavad Gita specifically as the most important book to read in Kali Yuga. If one can understand the Bhagavad Gita, of course one can read Srimad Bhagavatam, which is what we are progressing to. Because Srimad Bhagavatam, all the principles, the same principles that are there in the Bhagavad Gita, are expanded just for more scientific, more conclusive understanding. Because the Bhagavad Gita has all the essential elements of understanding that the spirit soul needs. what is five principles are taught in the Bhagavad Gita which are essential. It is not possible to actually function, to attain any success in any sphere of life without these five principles. To understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. To understand that we are a spirit soul. As we described, the spirit soul is essential to understand, because the spirit soul, without understanding that we're a spirit soul, and without understanding our relationship with the Supreme Soul, there is no possibility of controlling the intelligence, the mind and the senses. Therefore, what is the question of having any success in any sphere of life? The modes of nature, the modes of material nature, under three modes: passion, goodness and ignorance. Time, eternal time and space. Eternal time and eternal space. Srila Prabhupada also mentions eternal space, that the spiritual world is also mentioned. That there is a spiritual abode, and time, eternal time, means the spiritual energy of the Lord, such as that it is time is controlling every event that happens in the material world. So we are seeing scientifically, we are seeing bit by bit here how time agitates the material energy from the very beginning. And Krishna is also explaining in the Bhagavad Gita, time I am, that, you know, already all these people on the battle of Kurukshetra, they're already killed by my will. What is that will? Time. That time is the eternal energy of the Lord. Already they are killed. So this time factor is controlling the material energy under three different modes of material nature. And then karma, you know, various activities of the living entities under the various modes of nature. So these five principles, without understanding these five principles, no one can say I'm a Hindu or, you know, I'm a philosopher of, you know, in, you know, if the soul is transmigrating according to the three modes of material nature, taking different bodies amongst 8,400,000 different forms, under the, you know, influence of the time factor, controlled by the Paramatma, who is the witness and sanctioner of all activities, how can you understand karma? How can you understand reincarnation? How can you understand, how to perform spiritual or material activities properly without understanding these factors? It is the most... But the people want to say, yes, I study ancient Indian philosophy, you know, means, no, I don't know, I haven't studied about Ishvara and I haven't studied about the soul or the three... But I read the Rasa Leela regularly. Or, you know, I read the instructions of Dattatreya. Dattatreya, of course, you know, he has some instructions which are meant for the Vaishnavas and some instructions which are meant for the atheists. Which part are they reading? I read a little bit of this or a little bit of that. But what they will read is any scripture where Krishna doesn't say, you give up all your nonsense and surrender to me. That's what they will read. You know, even when they read the Srimad Bhagavatam, they're not interested in the part about Kamsa, because they know that when they read that, they just get this sense, I'm going to be vanquished just like Kamsa, because, you know, my activities are something like that. You know, I think I'm all powerful and I, you know, completely disregard God, don't really like that part, you know. They're not going to read that, they're just straight to the Rasa Leela. Oh yes, you know, there's a sex desire. So they will read any scripture but the Bhagavad Gita. And yet, only the Bhagavad Gita, of all scriptures, contains the essential knowledge that every spirit soul needs to know. That is there, that is the glory. Therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita Mahatmyam, it says, and this is, and also, you know, it's described by Prabhupada in the purport. He emphasizes this point in the first canto. I think it's the 15th chapter, where Arjun remembers the Gita, you know, when he was in distress. And Prabhupada mentions that the Gita was designed because in Kali Yuga it is not possible for people to read all the Vedic literatures and come to, you know, a whole understanding of Vedic literature. It's not possible. They don't have the time, they don't have the inclination. Most people that actually, you know, they say, yes, I know Ramayana, I know Mahabharata, and you ask them, are you reading? No, I you know, the kids watch the cartoons and I sort of stand in the background, you know, sort of, you know, listening like that. You know, have you actually read anything? No. You know, in Kali Yuga, people won't actually, they don't actually read anything very much except the newspapers. You know. But, and Vyasadeva knew this, so he said, I'll just give them one little book, Bhagavad Gita, but everything they need to know is in that book. It is the most essential scripture. So you can read so many other Vedic literatures. It says in the Bhagavad Gita Mahatmya, if you read Vedic literatures and you haven't read the Bhagavad Gita, your knowledge is not only useless, it's basically atheistic. If you read Vedic literatures and don't study the Bhagavad Gita, somehow you're averse to reading the Bhagavad Gita, your understanding will be, you know, verging on demoniac, atheistic. So, you know, Srila Vyasadeva, he understood. They're not going to read anything, and if they do, they'll just read something which is just, you know, satisfies the sense gratification. And Srila Vyasadeva knew this propensity because Narada Muni had already told them, you've written so many, you know, Vedic literatures, but in them, even in the Mahabharata, you know, their tendency is just to look for, you know, something that condones their sense gratification. And already in all the Vedic scriptures, you've actually, in one sense, done that. You've told them about all the, you know, different activities and the various modes of material nature, which may be pious and what have you. But Krishna said, give up all your piety and impiety and you surrender unto me. So Srila Vyasadeva understood this, that I have to get them to understand the essence. And the essence is this. You know, people read the Vedic literatures to see how they can be peaceful with their family and their wealth and their nice house in you know, live in this Kali Yuga, you know, in this material body, you know, which is temporary, with the mind and the senses, which are, you know, always giving them so much trouble. There's no question of any peace in this material world. Krishna says very clearly, that's the difference for the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna will say, from the highest planet to the lowest planet, there is nothing but misery. You know, and they're reading the Vedic literatures, oh, if you do this, you can get a good wife, and if you do this, you can go to heaven like this. He's saying, yes, you can go there, you can do that, but in the end, you're just finding misery. Better give it up, like that. So, Srila Vyasadeva wrote the Bhagavad Gita because it gives Krishna's ultimate conclusion, hard hitting. You know, this is the essence of the Vedas. Don't try to live peacefully in this material world, you know, with the mind and the senses and the material body. You know, you go back to Godhead. If you want to go back to Godhead, you have to get released from the material energy. And if you want to get released from the material energy, who is controlling the material energy? That is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So you must surrender unto Him. This is, you know, we're hearing about creation. And the whole point that we get from this process of creation is that Krishna is the control of the material energy. You know, we're not necessarily interested in creation for the sake, oh, that's how it happened. You know, and therefore, you know, knowing how things can be created, I can, you know, make my own little illusory creation. We study creation in the sense that, oh, there must be a Supreme Personality of Godhead, and now I know that if I surrender that to that Supreme Personality of Godhead, because He is the control of the material energy, He can also release me from it. No other person, no other demigod or anyone can actually release us from the material energy. So, here, you know, here we're just looking at, you know, one or two verses from the Bhagavad Gita, which are being further explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and we can see very clearly that it is essential to understand the principles of Bhagavad Gita in order to be successful in this world and, of course, to go back to Godhead in the next. And without that crucial information, it is, you know, all other studies of the Vedas are practically useless. But in this age, people skillfully avoid the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita, but our job, of course, is to somehow, you know, attract them to the Bhagavad Gita. You know, somehow, you know, that therefore you see that Srila Prabhupada, whoever he spoke to, He would say, on every point. So he spoke to thousands of people on thousands of subjects. And in every point, he said, yes, that is referred to in the Bhagavad Gita. That's how a devotee speaks. So, and then people start to think, oh, what is this Bhagavad Gita? Well, let me also say. Let me see. Whatever a devotee speaks, they'll say, yes, that is there in the Bhagavad Gita. And if people keep hearing that, they think, oh, this Bhagavad Gita is something important. They always refer to the Bhagavad Gita. You can quote from many, many scriptures, but for the sake of helping people, you know, to understand the most essential items, you know, that they need to, you should always refer to the Bhagavad Gita first and foremost. Then you can expand that understanding in Srimad Bhagavatam or what have you. And therefore, you know, these books, Prabhupada's small books, Bhagavad Gita, what have you. Even in Prabhupada's, you know, we distribute sometimes Krishna book and what have you. You see that right throughout there, he always, still, even he's speaking, you see in his Krishna book, he's still referring, you know, this is supported in the Bhagavad Gita. This is supported in the Bhagavad Gita, like that. And so this is very, very important. And if people understand that, then they can, you know, do the most important thing, and that is understand that they are a spirit soul, and that spirit soul taking shelter of the Supreme Lord, then all the functions of intelligence, mind, and the senses become completely spiritualized and take one back to the spiritual world. So I'll just leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments.
Well, you mentioned the senses and mind intelligence, their evolution under the thought. The mind is a manifestation of just an intelligence.
The mind
is a manifestation of what of
goodness.
Yeah.
You know, it's a if we fill our mind with thoughts of Krishna, then we're always in the association of Krishna. And being in the association of Krishna, the soul remembers, you know, all knowledge, all transcendental knowledge, its own spiritual nature, its home in the spiritual world, its nature to serve the Supreme Lord, like that. So if our mind is always with Krishna, then we will always be Krishna conscious. We'll not be in illusion, we'll be in you know, full knowledge of and that will take us back to Godhead. If our mind is filled with material things, the dhati things in Prabhupada says, then, you know, we will remain in the material world. So the intelligence influences the soul. Good intelligence, Krishna conscious intelligence, influences the soul to think of Krishna rather than the material energy. And that way the mind does not degrade one, but elevates one. That intelligence, which is a manifestation of the, you know, material energy in the modes of passion, gradually, you know, it's a mechanical, device. But as one becomes Krishna conscious, they become Jivan Mukta, and then, you know, when we're referring to the mind and the intelligence, we're referring to the mind and intelligence of the soul proper, not the, you know, mechanical device of material intelligence. So, you know, the, for activity, it is an energy which, you know, has the potency of activity, Kriya Shakti. We want our activities to gradually be dovetailed in Krishna consciousness. So, you know, for there to be activity of the senses, there must be intelligence the intelligence guides all the activities, so therefore the intelligence is also a manifestation of that mode of passion. In the beginning, that mechanical device, it can be utilized, but in the long term, it is not necessary that, the intelligence, which is, and the mind, which are, you know, integral facets, characteristics of the soul, perform the same functions.
In the point of devotee, as to acknowledge the source of life, you know, but what about the others who are.
So let's put it this way. Let's put this back to Prabhupada's analogy. We have the reins, right? The soul is sitting there, and the soul is saying to the intelligence, direct the mind, which is the reins, grab a hold of those reins, steer those horses, the senses, in this way. In the Bhagavad Gita, it describes that actually the soul does nothing. Everything is done by the modes of material energy. You know, therefore, the soul is described as a passenger because he does nothing. But when the soul actually becomes active, the soul can directly, indicate to the senses to go in a particular way without so much of the mechanical device. Instead of being a dormant passenger or an inactive passenger, the soul senses can actually become active in its own right. Therefore, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that the material body is like a machine. It is being directed, under Krishna's supervision. What is that verse in the 8th? Who knows that translation? The Bhagavad Gita 18. What's that? Yep. The soul is situated on the machine of the body. Yeah, what is the translation? Where's our scholars? That's fine. What number is it? 18. Verse here, 1861. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy. So, you know, the whole thing is a machine. Therefore, you know, the intelligence, you know, the material intelligence is part of that machine. But it's essential, you know, for activity. Material intelligence motivated by, you know, empowered by the Kriya Shakti or the, you know, material energy in the mode of passion. It's an essential part of activity. You know, it's the energy, you know, of activity. Purport. Arjuna was not the supreme knower, and his decision to fight or not to fight was confined to his limited discretion. Lord Krishna instructed that the individual is not all in all. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, or he himself, Krishna, as the localized super soul, sits in the heart directing the living being. After changing bodies, the living entity forgets his past deeds, but the super soul, as the knower of the past, present, and future, remains a witness of all these activities. Therefore, all the activities of the living entities are directed by this super soul. The living entity gets what he deserves and is carried by the material body, which is created in the material energy under the direction of the super soul. As soon as the living entity is placed in a particular type of body, he has to work under the spell of that bodily situation. A person seated in a high-speed motor car goes faster than one seated in a slower car, though the living entities, the drivers, may be the same. Similarly, by the order of the supreme soul, material nature fashions a particular type of body to a particular type of living entity so that he may work according to his past desires. The living entity is not independent. One should not think himself independent of the supreme personality of Godhead. The individual is always under the Lord's control, therefore one's duty is to surrender, and that is the injunction of the next verse. So, when the living entity is desiring, according to his own desires, to do something, he uses the, you know, material, he's under the modes of material nature, he's under the Lord's supervision through the material energy. But in such a case, it's Arjuna decided to act under the direction of Krishna, then he's under the supervision of Krishna's energy directly. You know, so therefore, you know, the material body is no longer considered to be acting under the modes of material passion, but those energies are acting directly, coming from Krishna. So for instance, we're saying that the mode of passion has its ability to induce material activity by Kriya Shakti. Kriya Shakti is the Lord's spiritual energy. What gives the material energy? Can the material energy cause activity? No. What causes material energy to create activity? Is it the Lord has impelled it by his own energy. That energy is called Kriya Shakti. So the only difference is that those activities may still be, you know, impelled by Kriya Shakti, but without the material taint. It's, you know, it's the Lord's energy will act either through the material energy or just directly upon the soul. So therefore, a Krishna conscious person is being impelled directly by the Lord's energy, whereas one who is not Krishna conscious is being impelled by the material energy, which is being impelled, you know, by the Lord's spiritual energy anyway. You know. So, you know, in one case there's a mechanical device that needs to be utilized, and in another case that mechanical device can be somewhat is being controlled by the Lord himself directly, more directly.
If you engage your intelligence in reading sastra,
yeah,
does that make it in the mode of goodness, or is it always?
Shastra, then the mind gradually comes from the lower modes up to goodness, and then becomes situated in the transcendental energy that's stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the first canto, second chapter, that gradually by hearing, Nasta Praise Bhadrasya Nicham Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavata Uttamasloke Bhakti Bhavati Nasikiya Sandhava, by regularly hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, and rendering service unto the pure devotees, all that is troublesome from the heart is almost destroyed. Gradually one becomes established in pure loving devotional service. So this hearing of the Bhagavad Gita, and postgraduate study of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the soul becomes situated directly in the spiritual energy, situated in the spiritual energy above all the modes.